Good evening. It's really awesome to be back. Like Joe said, I grew up here, and so just the first thing that I would want to say is thank you, because growing up in this community with you guys as a church family was really an incredible blessing and really prepared me for a lot once I went to college and did different things. So just thank you for the church that you guys are, and I'm just very glad to be back. But like Joe said, I got the opportunity to go to Ecuador this summer. For most of the summer, I was in Washington, D.C., interning for a political group, which was really interesting, to say the least. A funny story from that, one of the things that I heard when I was in D.C. for the majority of the summer is they said politics, so it comes from two parts. First, poly, meaning many, and ticks, which are blood-sucking parasites. And so when you put those together, you get a lot of parasites. Luckily, at the end of the summer, I had 2 free weeks, and I had the opportunity to go to Ecuador. It just so happened that in those 2 weeks, Rusty and Laura and the camp there, they were hosting 2 different kids' camps. And so I got the opportunity to be a counselor for 2 weeks. And the first week was a Christian basketball camp in which they kind of used basketball as a way to teach the gospel and different lessons in Christianity. There were several kids baptized during that week. It was an incredibly awesome week. The second week was a standard church camp, as you would imagine it, except in Spanish. And that was also just an incredible week. And honestly, I love going down there. This week, those 2 weeks were really special because I was going, one of my best friends from Harding actually also decided to go. And he, his church back home helped him go. And so I got to experience that with one of my best friends. But it was amazing being there. And one of the reasons was because of how amazing Rusty and Laura are. And something that I found myself talking to Rusty a lot about was perspective. Rusty and Laura, they've lived in just so many different places. They've been missionaries in Japan. They've studied in Portugal because they were going to be missionaries in Angola. Now they're missionaries in Ecuador. They've both lived in the United States. And so they just have an incredible perspective about them. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk a little bit tonight, because it was kind of the theme of my 2 weeks, just gaining a different perspective. And specifically, what I want to talk about is how gratitude plays into that perspective. And it just so happens by sheer coincidence that this week is Thanksgiving. Whenever I was thinking about what I wanted to say, I had always thought about talking about gratitude. And so whenever Joe told me the week that I was able to go, I was like, wow, it's incredible. So just talking about that. So my first question, what I want to get you guys to think about a little bit before I say anything, is do you think you're a grateful person? Just no lying to yourself. Just honestly sit there and think, do you honestly believe in your heart of hearts that you have an attitude that really focuses on giving thanks? Just think about that for a second. And as you're thinking about that, you can go ahead and turn to Exodus chapter 20. Chapter 19, actually. The story of Israel is an incredible story. Whenever we think about the Old Testament, for me at least, growing up, it was sometimes kind of hard to see what I could have learned from these people. Whenever the stories are from thousands of years ago, it's a completely different culture. But how gratitude plays into the story of Israel is really incredible in my mind. Because sometimes I would view the Old Testament as kind of just a book of rules. If you read anywhere in Leviticus or Deuteronomy, sometimes you'll see these different rules, and it can be kind of archaic and hard to focus on. But when you understand the full picture of Israel as a nation, it becomes really interesting. Because in Genesis, you have this story of the beginning of Israel's nation, and Abraham being called and being told that he was going to be made into this great nation. And then the beginning of Exodus, you have this critically important story in Israel's history, where they're enslaved in Egypt, but then God acts as a deliverer. He uses Moses to bring them out of Egypt, to bring them out of captivity, and you have this just beautiful picture of deliverance, of redemption, and of God's love. And then after that, this is where you start to see the inserting of commandments, the inserting of different rules. But I want you to look specifically about how it's worded. So in chapter 19, here God is talking to Moses, and he says, this is what you're to say to the people of Israel, starting in verse 4 of chapter 19. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you out myself. Now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And then in chapter 20, verse 1, where God's talking about the Ten Commandments, he first says, and God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt and out of the land of slavery. And then he goes on to talk about the Ten Commandments. And what's really interesting about this is most of the time, God's commandments here, they're supposed to be a response to God's actions. So Israel's obedience is a response to God's grace. It's not a way of achieving it. So whenever Israel is brought out of slavery, later on you'll read and God says, treat your slaves like this because you were once slaves. Treat the needy like this with just a love because you were once in need. And so throughout Israel's story, the first thing that happens is God's action. And then out of gratitude, they're supposed to love others. And out of gratitude, they're supposed to be set apart. And so now how that looks for us, I think, is really interesting because that's the story of Israel. But thinking about what God has done for us is just absolutely absurd in the most wonderful possible way. And just the amount of gratitude that we should be having is just crazy to me because of all of the good things that happen in our lives. Just from a purely, first off, secular, physical, materialistic level, the amount of blessings that we have is crazy. The fact that we were born in this country now, at this time in history, is a miracle. Of all the times you could have been born in history, you're born in a time where you get to sit on a cushioned seat and air conditioning and have indoor plumbing. Just the amount of blessing that is truly radical. The fact that you can leave after this and get in your car and drive 15, 20 miles sometimes just to get wherever you want is incredible. The fact that you can call people hours away on this tiny little device is truly miraculous. And so we have all these different physical blessings, yes, but what's craziest of all is the blessings that we have in the spiritual realm. One of my friends from Harding, he was telling me a story the other day, about a week before Thanksgiving break, and he was telling me about his granddad. And his granddad was this crazy big Cardinals fan. He just absolutely loved the Cardinals. But how he watched them was interesting. So he would never watch the Cardinals games live. He would only ever record them whenever he was at home. And then immediately after the game ended, he would check the score. And if they had lost the game, he would just delete the recording and he wouldn't watch it. But if they had won, he would go through and rewatch it. And so one time my friend asked his grandpa, he was like, why do you watch the games like that? And he said, well, if you know your team's going to win, no matter what happens, whenever there's an error, whenever you're down, it makes the victory that much sweeter because you know you're going to win. And he kind of compared it to Christianity. And he said, that's where we're at. We've literally already won the game. Like the worst thing that could happen to us as Christians, the worst thing as humans, that is, that could happen to us is our physical death. We've already won that. Jesus has already conquered that. And the amount of perspective that should give us, it should change how we view the world. We could go out tomorrow and lose our life, but we've already won. And so living with that type of gratitude, it's something that's crazy because it's not just internal. I think sometimes with the spirit of Thanksgiving, we can get to where we say, oh, we're grateful for these different things, and that's great. But I think that level of gratitude should change how we act. And I think it should change us in three fundamental ways. And in three fundamental areas, it should really have us caution sins that we have if we have a spirit of gratitude. And the first one is with anger. I think it's impossible to simultaneously be angry at whatever's going on while also simultaneously thinking of all the blessings that you have. I think anger can ruin relationships. It can be disastrous if you handle it in the wrong way. And so the next time you're angry, I think understanding it from God's perspective is really interesting. Previously, this last year in Arkansas, we've gotten a lot of publicity because of public executions. There have been people who have just made disastrous choices in their life, committed heinous acts against kids, people in general, and because of that, they've received the death penalty. And these are society's worst people, society's people that have committed just the most awful acts. But I want you to imagine one of those people, someone who just does something awful, to a child. But imagine that in a sense where the parent of that child has another child. And they say, you know, that person is supposed to get the death penalty. That person is supposed to be killed for the awful things they've done. But instead, I'm going to take my 2-year-old child who hasn't done anything, who's completely innocent, and they're going to take the punishment, and that person's going to walk free. Now, if something like that happened in society, we would go crazy. But that's what God has done for us. At points, we've been the guilty people. We are far more sinful than I think sometimes we understand. But because of that, we're far more loved than we understand. At points, we've been the people that have committed awful acts. We've turned our back on God. We've hurt other people. But God has stepped in and said, in spite of that, you can have my son who's completely innocent. And if God can resist that type of anger, that type of judgment, then why can't we? If we can recognize how gracious God has been towards us and the amount of thankfulness we have for that sacrifice, then whenever something goes wrong in our lives, whenever something goes bad, whenever someone's mean to us, someone does something that's inconvenient for us, I think we ought to be able to control our anger. To think about it another way, in the New Testament, the relationship between God and the Jesus and the church is described as a marriage. But it's one in which we're constantly failing. We're constantly turning our back on that marriage. In a sense, we're constantly cheating in that marriage. We say, oh yes, God, we love you. We're going to follow you. But just right now, I'm going to choose this other thing. And in a way, that is like we're cheating on God in that marriage. And so for those of you that are married, think about that. Think about an idea, a situation where your spouse is constantly cheating on you, and yet you still choose to love them. That's a radical love. And so to recognize that type of grace that we're given, I think really should inhibit our ability to get as angry as we do, and to get as angry as sometimes we allow ourselves to get. Because when you think about all that God has done for us, I think it really should limit that ability for anger to come through. But it's not just anger. I think gratitude is great at combating anger, but it's also great at combating worry. Now in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus talks about worry. And he says in verse 25 of chapter 6, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who can, by worrying, add a single hour to his life?" So here you have the God of the universe. And just a quick side note, I think sometimes because we talk about God so often, we often lose sight of how majestic he is and how powerful he is. The word God, sometimes we just become so accustomed to it that we forget that this is the God who spoke the universe into existence. Like literally spoke the universe into existence. Has that type of power, that type of dominion over everything going on in our lives. And here he's saying, do not worry. Don't worry because I am with you. Right before this in chapter 6, he talks about in your Bible you'll have different sections, but one of them will be treasures in heaven. But right before that, you have three different sections where Jesus talks about different actions that we should be doing. The first is giving to the needy, the second is prayer, and the third is fasting. And in each of these, he says, so when you give to the needy, and when you pray, and when you fast. And so these are not questions of if you do this, it's when. Whenever you pray, whenever you give, and whenever you fast. And I think the next time that you're caught up in worry, you should focus on these three items and having a spirit of gratitude whenever you're doing them. What's the most radical way? Say you're worried about money, you've got a bill, you've got something coming up, and you're worried, but you remember the graciousness of God and you remember the sacrifice that's called upon you. And so you do something that the world would rule as crazy. You say, yeah, I'm worried about money, but I'm so grateful for the things that God has given me that I'm going to give some money away. Or in prayer, you say, yes, things are not going good and I'm worried about them and I'm worried about the situation or what's going on in my job or career. But I recognize that God is sovereign and that God is good. And because of that, I'm going to pray to him and say, God, I'm worried about this, but I know that through you, I have strength. Through you, you empower me. You give me hope. And fasting, saying, God, the things of the world, food, the things that our mortal bodies need, I don't even need that because I have you. And that is so much greater. That is so much better. And I think worry is one of those things that all of us do. We all have times when we're nervous or we're anxious or we're fearful about something. But focusing on gratitude, focusing on what God has done, who he is, I think that completely changes our perspective. I think completely changes how we think. And so because of that, I don't think you can simultaneously be grateful and also worry. But it's not just worry and it's not just anger. I think the third area that gratitude can combat is laziness. Being lazy with your faith. And this is something that I struggle with. It's something that I think at all times we struggle with. But just thinking about everything that God has done in your life and everything that God has done before you were even born and the amount of just lack of effort sometimes we put into our faith, the lack of emphasis, how we just neglect it, is kind of scary. And it's kind of a threat not only to our faith, but also just our relationship with God and with others. A perfect example of this comes from the prophet Amos. And he's a prophet talking about Israel and their relationship. And God comes to Amos and he says, I want you to say this to the people of Israel. And this is in Amos chapter 5, verse 21. He says, I despise your religious feasts. I cannot stand your assemblies. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your hearts. But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. God's saying to the Israelites, listen, your worship, it sounds pretty, but I'm not even going to listen to it because you don't live it out. And this is where I get fearful for the church. Not just in America, but for Christians everywhere. Because, yeah, we'll show up to church, and that's great, and singing worship is great. But God says, I want you to live it out, or else I'm not even going to listen to you. I'm not going to listen to your worship songs, even if they're beautiful. Because if you're not living it out, it doesn't mean anything to me. The Israelites, they were supposed to be a nation that was set apart. They were supposed to live in a way that was distinctive. They were supposed to live in a way that other nations looked at them and said, there's something different. The way that they treated one another, the way that they treated the poor, the way that they treated those who were in need, those ways that they treated the outsider, the foreigner, they were supposed to treat people differently. And then they didn't. And this is when God says, yeah, that's not how my people live. You're not my people if you're going to live that way. And so I think something critically important for us is if we're going to recognize everything that God has done for us, if we're going to recognize the power of his sacrifice, if we're going to recognize the gifts that he's given to us, then we have to recognize what it means to live with one another and to live as if our lives are made for other people, because they are. They're made to give. They're made to love. One of the things that I know I struggle most with is talking about things. Just talking about ways that you're going to help or ways that you're going to interact with people, but not actually doing. And so my challenge is recognizing gratefulness and then going out and doing it. And in Matthew chapter 25, here Jesus talks about the least of these. And he, in verse 34 of chapter 25, talks about and says, "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For when I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me.'" And then he goes on to say how then there were those of you who didn't do that. And so these short couple verses, I think, are a great check mark, are a great way to analyze what are you doing for people in your community. Now, I think the first step is knowing people. You can't visit people in prison if you don't know people in prison. You can't feed the homeless if you don't know people who are homeless. You can't clothe people if you don't know people who need clothes. And so I think the biggest challenge that we face right now in our church is not persecution by the outside world. We're by and large still the majority in America, Christians are. I think our main problem is laziness, getting comfortable, being complacent, because that is a far greater threat. Who's in more danger? The persecuted who are living out their lives, or the comfortable? And my opinion, it's the comfortable. And I think gratitude is one of the best ways to combat it. Recognizing that you're so grateful for all the things that you've been given to you, but because of that, similar to how there was an obligation for Israel to respond and live in a distinctive manner, there's an obligation for us to live in a distinctive manner. And it can be small things. Who are your geographic closest neighbors? The 10 people that live closest to you, inviting them over for dinner, investing in their lives. It's simple things. It's not complicated, but it's not easy either. But with gratitude and with that perspective, I think it can change radically the way that we live. Because if all of us were to just in the next 2-3 weeks invite 5 people over for dinner, figure out what's going on in their lives, figure out how we can be a blessing to them, say, "What can I do to help you?" I think that'll do more for sharing the gospel and spreading Christ's love than just randomly asking someone to come to church, because it allows you to get to know them and to love them and truly disciple to them. And we ought to do it because of what God has done for us, because we're grateful for the love that He has given us. So anger, worry, laziness. I think 3 of the biggest threats to our church, but things that we can all combat if we have the right perspective. I want to close with a story. About a week and a half ago, while I was in Searcy, I got pulled over. It was pretty sad, but I got pulled over, and luckily I didn't get a ticket. The cop was very nice. But after that, you know, after you get pulled over or after you get in a wreck, I think you're just like in the zone. You're like 10-2. You're really focused on the speed limit. You're just so focused. You're like, "I'm going to do a good job." And then like 15 minutes later, you kind of forget about that and you're back to like one-handed, like listening to music. You kind of like lose perspective. And what I'm scared of is that will happen after this week. You'll leave tonight and you'll go through Thanksgiving. You'll be like, "Yes, Jared was right. I should be more thankful." And then Monday morning will hit and you'll get a bill or something inconvenient will happen at work. And then you'll forget about it. And so my challenge for you for this Thanksgiving is to be thankful this week, yes. But be grateful the other 51 weeks out of the year. Because that's where the major change is. So tonight, if you need prayers, if you need help being more grateful, if you need anything, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?